Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the 420 Hump Day Edition. How you doing, Big Fancy?
Fantastic. Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays to you. It's a celebratory holiday, at least up around here. Got Evan helping me in the world headquarters here in Madison, Wisconsin. And, buddy, you know I'm hitting the road soon. Yeah. I'm going down to one of our fine sponsors that also think that this is the biggest day of the year, at least on their calendar. Knuckleheads, 520 State Street at 420. On 420, yours truly will be at Knuckleheads. I've already gone down. We've tested the gear, man. I'm all ready for a fine broadcast from Knuckleheads. I'll be in the humidor.
Oh, really?
Well, they're doing so much commerce in there today that, you know, you hate to be out amongst the broader public, just because there's a lot of them, man. They're celebrating. There are some great deals going on. So anyways, we'll do a little commerce at 420. Also, I got a fine congressman, my congressman, our good friend Mark Pocan, joining me at 3:30, just a little while from now, 3:30 Central, if you're not listening, in Wisconsin. And, we talked about the fact it's 420. I'm going to a party down on State Street. Dom will join us at 5. We'll communicate remotely. And I'm also going to bring you a Democratic message to believe in, man. Finally got a message the Democrats can believe in. And this one brought to my attention by Evan, our fine producer here in Madison. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But here's a thought. Here's where I'm going to start. And Evan, I want to see that sound on the rundown because I want to get there soon. What I want to start with today: Democrats are hostage to the myth of their ideas' unpopularity. But you know what? Democrats, we got good ideas, man. Here's what I mean. Paul Waldman at the Washington Post. Well, I'm going to skip some of this. I'm just going to put Crudy's spin on it. Here's what Waldman means to say. Did you notice the news last night? The mask mandates have been lifted mid-flight. And what do we see? We see cheering people. I even think I saw someone playing Celebration on the flights. And people are making TikTok and Cameo videos. Oh, man. Well, maybe not Cameo. Unless it's Rudy trying to earn a few bucks back in coach. But that's not necessarily the way the American people felt about this. Know what I'm saying? I wasn't celebrating. Tom wasn't celebrating. Fancy, were you? I don't think the American people were celebrating per se.
I'm going on a flight next week, two of them, to Florida.
I'm going to read a little bit of context here from the Post. In the wake of a move by a single activist, Trump judge talked about that a lot yesterday, to end the federal mask mandate on mass transit, we saw media footage of people cheering on planes and trains, tossing aside their masks and reveling in the freedom that they've so long been denied. Clearly, this must mean that Americans think this was long overdue and that the public health officials are authoritarian scolds who want to crush our pulmonary liberty. Except actually, that's not true. Polls show that while some people feel that way, most Americans have a more measured view of this question. A Politico Morning Consult poll taken just before the decision showed that 59% to 32% Americans favored the extension of the mass transit mask mandate. In addition, 49% said it was too soon to remove it. Just 27% said they, should have already been removed or should never have been imposed in the first place. So tyrannical. Likewise, an Associated Press in our NORC, Center for Public Affairs research poll found 56% to 24% Americans favored requiring people to wear masks on mass transit. So why is it that Republicans act like they're the ones with the public on their side? Well, Democrats act timid and ashamed. We're ashamed. As though the voters are bound to reject them if too much attention is drawn to the position they've taken. It's not just on the mask issue. Republicans probably can't believe how successful they've been at propagating myths, including that Americans are utterly freaked out about crime and blame liberals for it, that they're venomously anti-immigrant and want only to build walls and deport immigrants, and that they want schools and libraries to pull controversial books from the shelves. All those things might be true of the Republican base, but the Republican base is not the country, any more than the angry dude bro screaming at a flight attendant because he was asked to wear a mask represents the feelings of most Americans. As we head towards the midterm elections, we're going to see those myths reinforced in all kinds of ways. So, for instance, over at Politico, they got another article about swing state rep Abigail Spanberger, Dem from Virginia, and her apparent obsession with the defund the police, a thing some activists said a couple of years ago. The message is clear. In the place where real Americans live, people are enraged with out-of-touch liberals and their crazy ideas. And the only way Democrats can survive is moving right. Now, Waldman points out, crime is a genuine problem. It has gone up in the past couple of years. But in the latest Gallup poll on this subject, a grand total of 1% of people said crime is the most important issue facing the country. Freaking 1%! To reiterate, part of the reason swing district Democrats are consumed with the beliefs of voters who will never vote for them is that they're inevitably encountered, many of them, at the county fair, at the local diner, at the senior center. If half your district is made up of people from the other party, you'll spend a lot of time listening to them when they march up and give you a piece of their mind. These members then get griped by the false belief that they can only win if they appeal to the voters who, to repeat, are never going to vote for them anyways. This belief then gets reinforced by the media, which loves to write about how voters hate Democrats and the things they stand for. To be clear, the odds are that Democrats will suffer a loss in November. But if history is any guide, that loss will be wildly misinterpreted. There's a chance it might not happen. Politics is unpredictable. At the moment, the generic ballot, you want to vote for a Dem or a Republican in the House. That generic ballot's got Republicans up 2 points. Wow, 2 points. That might change in one direction or the other by November, but it hardly represents some kind of tsunami inevitability on the way. Nevertheless, we know what happens in off-year elections. The party controlling the White House almost always loses, both because independent voters take out whatever disgruntlement they have on the president, and because the opposition voters tend to be angry and agitated. Yeah, they're certainly that. While the ruling party's voters are often disappointed and passive. Yet when Democrats are the ones who suffered the loss, it's inevitably interpreted as a single, unified, ideological rejection of them. The voters will be told, said President Biden, and the Democrats are too liberal. I don't believe that. A little bit more here. Democrats are already writing that story, hoping that focusing on kitchen table issues will save them. If they're even trying to get their own base motivated to go to the polls, it's impossible to tell which party is more aggressive when it comes to schools or public safety or the pandemic or immigration or just about anything. The Republicans, of course, they act like everyone is on their side, and that attitude convinces the media to assume that they must be right. And Democrats get more fearful, more cautious, and more obsessed with finding the non-existent center, which makes it even more likely that they'll freaking lose.
When was the last time you heard anybody from the right moving left?
Never.
Or ever being urged to move left so they can get more voters?
Closest thing I ever heard to that concept, Mitt Romney's campaign staffer said they were going to Etch-a-Sketch their way back to the center after the primaries. I've heard that notion expressed only you know, through the plastic man candidacy that was Mitt Romney. And he was not appealing to Republicans either, right? They didn't elect the guy.
They still don't like him.
There is a young lady, young politician, young Democrat, and she may lead the way going forward, Fancy Brian. We've got some sound we're going to share in the next segment. But Greg Sargent, again from the Washington Post, a young Democrat's fire. Let me try that again. It is 420 after all, people. Give me a break.
I mean, you're doing a great job. I'm applauding you.
No, you're not. A young Democrat's viral takedown demands a wokeness rethink. You ever hear that term, woke? The Dems are woke. Well, wokeness is a problem, and we all know it. James Carville recently told Vox in his, you know, splendific way, the veteran strategist called on Democrats to distance themselves from faculty lounge bull. And you know what he said. And to undo their image as urban, coastal, arrogant party. I don't really do a Louisiana, but yeah, as far as like the Carolinas side.
Faculty lounge of people who hang out with kids all day, who talk about the culture all day. They don't know anything. Anyway.
Well, in this case, there's a point to be made, and it's not to fight over the details. This was widely treated as a breakthrough moment in a debate over whether Democrats have a wokeness problem. It was approvingly quoted not by one, but two major New York Times writers. So I contacted Carville to ask him what he thought of Mallory McMurrow. And I'd never heard of this woman. And she is a Democrat from Michigan. And I had to give all the credit to my fine producer, Evan. He brought this woman's impassioned statement to my attention. We're going to play it for you in the next segment. You want to hear what a winner sounds like? She is a freaking winner. This is what I want to hear all my Democratic friends talking like forevermore. You want to hear a winning strategy? I'm going to lay it out for you. James Carville, he can talk about wokeness, but then he heard this woman speak. And he is as enamored by this speech as I am. So, flag, great flag, Evan. We're going to play it for you, the fair audience, the great audience, the 420 audience. Man, we're going to have a good time. And coming very, very soon, my congressman, our good friend, Mark Pocan, he joins us right here on the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Some people say greatest radio show ever, because we're going to tell you Democrats what a winner sounds like. And it could be us.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Get the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
You like movies about gladiators?
No, thanks. We gave it the office.
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the 420 edition. Join me at Knuckleheads going down to State Street, 520 State Street specifically. About 420 this afternoon, we're going to broadcast live all the way to the end of the show, the happier happy hour. I'll be back in the humidor, you know, trying not to hydrate too much. Anyways, want to get back to this winning message of Mallory McMurrow. I'd never heard of her. She's a Democratic state senator in Michigan, and she delivered an epic takedown of a GOP colleague on Tuesday that continues to go viral. We're going to help it. It includes a forceful pushback against Republicans over laws stigmatizing gay and trans children and families, and a searing moral defense of treating them respectfully. Was it wokeness? Yes, at least in a sense. But either way, Carville appeared transfixed by it. Enormously effective piece of communication. There's really no comeback to it. So let's play it for the people. Fancy, going to need your help here. It's on the rundown. Thank you, Evan, for the flag. Let's play State Senator from Michigan, Mallory McMurrow. Cut number 30, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I didn't expect to wake up yesterday to the news that the senator from the 22nd district had overnight accused me by name of grooming and sexualizing children in an email fundraising for herself. So I sat on it for a while wondering why me. And then I realized because I am the biggest threat to your hollow, hateful scheme. Because you can't claim that you are targeting marginalized kids in the name of, quote, parental rights if another parent is standing up to say no. So then what? Then you dehumanize and marginalize me. You say that I'm one of them. You say she's a groomer. She supports pedophilia. She wants children to believe that they were responsible for slavery and to feel bad about themselves because they're white.
Let's play more of State Senator Mallory McMurray. McMurrow. Mallory McMurrow. Too much alliteration for me. Cut 31, please.
Growing up, my family was very active in our church. I sang in the choir. My mom taught CCD. One day, our priest called a meeting with my mom and told her that she was not living up to the church's expectations and that she was disappointing. My mom asked why. Among other reasons, she was told it was because she was divorced and because the priest didn't see her at Mass every Sunday. So where was my mom on Sundays? She was at the soup kitchen with me. My mom taught me at a very young age that Christianity and faith was about being part of a community, about recognizing our privilege and blessings and doing what we can to be of service to others, especially people who are marginalized, targeted, and who had less, often unfairly. I learned that service was far more important than performative nonsense like being seen in the same pew every Sunday or writing Christian in your Twitter bio and using that as a shield to target and marginalize already marginalized people. I also stand on the shoulders of people like Father Ted Hesburgh.
A little bit more from the impassioned Mallory McMurrow, State Senator Michigan. Cut 32, please.
The longtime president of the University of Notre Dame, who was active in the civil rights movement, who recognized his power and privilege as a white man, a faith leader, and the head of an influential and well-respected institution, and who saw black people in this country being targeted and discriminated against and beaten, and reached out to lock arms with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. when he was alive, when it was unpopular and risky, and marching alongside them to say, "We've got you." To offer protection and service and allyship to try to right the wrongs and fix injustice in the world. So who am I? I am a straight, white, Christian, married, suburban mom who knows that the very notion that learning about slavery or redlining or systemic racism somehow means that children are being taught to feel bad or hate themselves because they are white is absolute nonsense. No child alive today is responsible for slavery. No one in this room is responsible for slavery.
A little bit more before she drops the mic. Senator Mallory McMurrow.
But each and every single one of us bears responsibility for writing the next chapter of history. Each and every single one of us decides what happens next and how we respond to history and the world around us. We are not responsible for the past. We also cannot change the past. We can't pretend that it didn't happen or deny people their very right to exist. I am a straight, white, Christian, married, suburban mom. I want my daughter to know that she is loved, supported, and seen for whoever she becomes. I want her to be curious, empathetic, and kind. People who are different are not the reason that our roads are in bad shape after decades of disinvestment or that healthcare costs are too high or that teachers are leaving the profession. I want every child in this state to feel seen, heard, and supported, not marginalized and targeted because they are not straight, white, and Christian. We cannot let hateful people tell you otherwise to scapegoat and deflect from the fact that they are not doing anything to fix the real issues that impact people's lives. And I know that hate will only win if people like me stand by and let it happen. So I want to be very clear right now. Call me whatever you want. I hope you brought in a few dollars. I hope it made you sleep good last night. I know who I am. I know what faith and service means and what it calls for in this moment. We will not let hate win.
That sounds like a winning attitude for Democrats. I'm going to read a little bit more from the Washington Post while there's time. You'll note that McMurrow didn't sound defensive or offer mealy-mouthed, hair-splitting fact checks. She didn't capitulate to the Republican framing of these matters for a second. Instead, McMurrow laid bare her deepest convictions and explained how they lead her to her positions on gay and trans rights and why basic human decency demands them. Importantly, she made this about what Republicans are doing. That's a winning message, people. That is a winner. Let's talk like that more often. Let's have real conversations. And that's what I mean by real. Talk about your Christianity. As far as I'm concerned, you don't have to be a Christian. You can be a good human being. But don't let them grab Christianity, wrap themselves in the cross or the flag. I mean, Jesus, as far as I can tell, he was a progressive liberal. Like my next fine guest, Mark Pocan, congressman from the great state of Wisconsin. He joins us next. More Devils.
They're winners. Winners get to do what they want.
Grass-fed, locally raised, 100% organic. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the 420 edition, a Wednesday. I am joined right now live via phone by my favorite congressman, my congressman, Mark Pocan, Pocan from the great state of Wisconsin. I know your name. Welcome back, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You know, Mark, 420, I got a little live event after this interview, sneaking downtown to one of our fine sponsors. But I got to tell you, Mark, it's hard to celebrate the 420 the way I'd like to, because the state of Wisconsin is a prohibitionist state. Mark, let's just start with your thoughts on legalizing marijuana, sir.
Well, I mean, I think it's a no-brainer, right? We should be there. You know, we did pass the bill in the House that finally went forward around a number of issues around marijuana. It makes no sense that, you know, we still have marijuana Schedule One drug, that you can't put money from your legal marijuana business into the bank when so many states have either legal marijuana or legal medical marijuana. And yet you're right, Wisconsin's a real outlier even nationally compared to so many other states.
And Mark, we know the opinion of the people of the great state of Wisconsin, of the American people. This is not their will. They don't want prohibition going on in their state. They'd at least like to see some sort of legalized medical applications. Mark, do you see any possibility of passage through the U.S. Senate of this House pass piece?
You know, I'll tell you, I never predict anything through the Senate given their antiquated use of the filibuster, right? So, you know, a majority isn't a majority only in the U.S. Senate. But, you know, I think even in Wisconsin, the path forward continues to be around public support. And we know the public support is there. I'm a big believer of if the people lead, eventually the leaders will follow. And right now the leaders aren't following. But I think if we put enough public pressure on, we will get to a point of sanity even here in Wisconsin.
Mark, we saw a Trump-appointed judge roll back the mask mandate. And that's not the will of the American people. Near as I can tell, polling's at least 2-1 in favor of continuing mask mandates on airplanes, on mass transit. Mark, were you surprised by the ruling, the appeal coming from the Biden administration? Where do you think we should be as a nation on mask mandates?
So I mean, this is a one where this is a federal judge that should never have been a federal judge. Yet, of course, Ron Johnson supported her, which is the case of someone who had never been a judge, who had never done a trial, who was a corporate attorney, who essentially family were donors within the Republican Party and got appointed. And even the American Bar Association said she wasn't qualified, which they don't say on that many people that make it that far. So, you know, to begin with, you had a very inexperienced, maybe not the most intellectually curious federal judge make that ruling. But I think, you know, the broader issue is, you know, we are in this weird transition period, right? We're kind of at the end of COVID, but maybe not quite. We don't tell COVID what to do. It tells us, yet everyone seems to think they're going to tell COVID what to do. You know, it's going to be more and more about people's comfort levels. I know when I fly, I'm going to wear a mask because it's, in my opinion, the smart thing to do. But it is a weird point that we're at in the pandemic.
Folks, you are listening to The Devils Advocates Radio Show. I've got my fine congressman, Mark Pocan, from the great state of Wisconsin, on the line. We've got him till the bottom of the hour, or whatever, top of the hour. I can't keep a track. Mark, your brother wanted to be a federal judge, and there was an appointment that was supported by both the Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin and the Republican Senator Ron Johnson in the state until it was time where the rubber hit the road. And Biden tried to make the appointment in the Green Bay District. Your brother should have been Justice Pocan. He is a state court judge, I believe, currently, Mark. You probably know better than I. But want to get your reaction to Ron Johnson specifically blocking your brother's nomination after he supported him for the role prior.
Yeah, well, this is classic Rojo, right? He was for him before he was against him. He and Tammy Baldwin put four names forward that they recommended that went through a review panel they jointly had folks on, and the president picked from the list they jointly put out there. The only difference that occurred is Ron Johnson announced he was running for re-election and decided that he was going to try to somehow use this to help with the base. And the only thing that we can really come up with is the only thing, you know, he knew my brother was the deputy chief in Milwaukee County. His argument about the bail case is completely bogus. Everyone has said that. Even I think he would admit it at the end of the day. But, you know, my brother is married to another man. And I think, you know, a lot of us think this is more about pleasing his base by turning this down. And, you know, this is one of the reasons that Senator Durbin said that they might overrule the blue slip rules that they, again, another antiquated rule they follow in the Senate. If they thought there was discrimination based on religion, gender, race, or sexual orientation, that they might give up on the rule. So it's not done yet. The president's still very committed to, you know, having someone who got unanimous support by the bar, the national bar, saying he was well qualified, which, again, that's pretty difficult to get every single person who does the review to say that. But Ron Johnson's not for that person, but supported the person who, you know, the bar even said wasn't qualified. Yeah, this is just Rojo. He's as political as they come. There's no consistency. There's not a lot of thought that a lot of people can see. And it's unfortunate that he's being this petty, that he would, you know, try to appeal to, you know, the uglier elements of the Republican Party by, you know, being homophobic.
Well, Mark, you stole my thunder. I was going to ask you if you thought Rojo was just being frickin' petty, and perhaps he is. Mark Pocan, my fine guest, live via phone until 4 o'clock. Mark, wanted to ask you, I've seen a recent advocacy for taxing the rich, and I don't think you're new to this party. I think you felt that way for a long time. But let's talk about why now and what your specific advocacy would be for.
I'm sorry, can you say that again? I missed the question. I apologize.
Tax the rich. Why now? And what specifically would you be for, Mark?
So a number of things. I mean, I think, you know, one, we should get rid of the tax cuts for the ultra wealthy that Donald Trump and Paul Ryan and others passed. Clearly, you know, I think something like 85-86% of the money goes ultimately to the top 1%. That's something that should go away. I think we should be taxing, you know, the people who make more at higher rates. And there's a number of proposals to do that. But I also think we need to have essentially a billionaire tax. And I think the president's proposal is one of the more unique that I think I'm most intrigued by, which is, you know, there's so many ways that rich people don't pay taxes like the rest of us, especially as a percent of their income. And they have these extra, you know, ways to avoid paying their fair share. The president's saying, fine, if we can't get rid of all these individual loopholes, let's at least say they should be paying at least 20%, and no matter what, they're going to pay that. So essentially, they can play the game with lots of accountants and lawyers, but at the end of the day, they're still going to pay something that's closer to what real people pay as a percent of their income. I think that's a smart proposal, and I hope that, you know, as a Congress, we can try to bring some tax fairness, because, you know, as of Monday, a lot of people paid a good percent of their income in on taxes as responsible citizens, and yet almost every billionaire and most every millionaire didn't pay their fair share.
And some of us extended, Mark. Let me ask you about gouging. We hear all the time, you know, the inflation is rampant and it's all Joe Biden's fault. But I also know that, notice that corporate profits are rampant, and it's back-to-back the two most profitable quarters in America's history. Well, you wonder what the inflation rate is. It basically mirrors the increase in corporate profits, Mark. Corporations are currently paying like 5.5% of the total tax burden of the United States. So when, you know, we hear our friends that said they were taxed enough already, well, the entire middle class feels taxed enough already, Mark. But how do we make corporations pay a fairer share as a percentage, as a, you know, I mean, there's so many corporations that don't even owe federal taxes due to, you know, depletion, loopholes, whatever the case may be. Mark, no one feels that that's a fair policy. How did the Democrats, or, you know, government in general, how do we deliver fairness in tax policy?
Well, I think one of the biggest things is, you know, the companies that hide their profits overseas so they don't have to pay taxes. So money that they've made here in the U.S., they claim that maybe their business logo is owned by an Irish entity where taxes are very low. And suddenly that logo is a huge portion of the sale. So they take those profits, shift it to a country where they don't pay very much in taxes, and they game the system. I mean, that's one of the main things I think we need to go after, or companies that, you know, essentially get paid and incentivized to send jobs overseas. But, you know, there's a really good book I just read called Tax the Rich by Morris Pearl. Morris Pearl is, I think, the president of the Patriotic Millionaires Group. This is a bunch of millionaires who've said, hey, we should be taxed more. And they, in a really simple way, break down both personal and corporate tax loopholes and dodges that people take advantage of most commonly. And it's a great book because it really does explain all the various ways they get special privileges compared to real people. We need to go after those. We need to plug those holes. And we need to make sure that corporations actually pay their fair share.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I am talking to Mark Pocan, my fine congressman, great state of Wisconsin. You know him. You love him just like we do. Mark, I want to ask you about specifically U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. He was the lone holdout Republican when it was time to pass the so-called Trump tax cuts. And what he was holding out for was a reduction in the tax rate for designated S corporations. Now, Mark, outside of politics, you own a small business. I own a small business. Ron came down to my former Milwaukee studios and said, oh, Crudy, I did this for the little guys like you and I, and by assumption, I suppose you, Congressman. But he also benefited from that from a couple of his donors. I mean, they got a whopper of a tax cut, Mark, depending on who's reporting you believe. It's between $80 million and $218 million that two families benefited in one singular tax filing year from this one reduction in taxation, and they kicked back like $21 million to Ron. So, you know, not a bad investment in a U.S. senator, all things considered. Mark, what was your thoughts on how Ron sort of handled that whole, you know, self-benefiting tax cut?
Corrupt, right? I mean, I think what people hate the most about politicians who game the system for themselves are exactly things like Ron Johnson did. So for himself and for his wealthiest donors, people who put a lot of money into Republican campaigns, he found a tax rule that won't benefit the average person whatsoever, and he will make sure that there's a way that they all profit. And to me, that's outright corruption. And, you know, we need to call him out at every turn. He's even, you know, admitted some of the process around this. But, you know, if I put something in place for, you know, bald-headed magicians, and I got a special tax cut, I think people might look at it as maybe a corrupt action. In his case, he took care of himself and some of his wealthiest donors, and I think the only way, the thing you can call it, is corruption.
Now, Mark, I've asked him specifically about that tax cut, you know, post facto, And he's still bragging about it. He's still proud of it. He says, you know, lots of American businesses got tax cuts. But, Mark, is it enough to say, well, you know, I gave crumbs to the masses, but, you know, there are a few very special beneficiaries of this tax policy. That's the way it's always worked in this country, isn't it, Mark?
No, I mean, the whole idea behind taxation, and people know this, it doesn't take a whole lot to look at how we do it. It's usually progressive. Right? The more money you make, the more you should pay in. That's the system. The problem is people figure out ways to game the system, and Ron Johnson figured out a way to game the system. He can claim that's clever or smart. I call it what I think most people call it, corrupt. And I think, you know, we need to just be as blunt as that. We have a senator who took advantage of his office to make sure he and other wealthy people who give money to him and other Republicans benefited the most. And I would say 99.9% of his constituents did not benefit anywhere close to those, that handful of people that did. So when he claims he did something for the common good, the common good was his bank account and a few other people.
Mark Pocan, stick around for the common good. More with my congressman, Mark Pocan, next.
You know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. My fine guest is kind of a big deal. He is Mark Pocan, my congressman from the great state of Wisconsin. Mark, thanks for sticking around. Appreciate the generosity of your time, sir.
Of course.
Want to ask you about what's going on in Florida. Ron DeSantis has signed off on a Don't Say Gay bill, as it's been described in the media. It's part of the cultural wars, obviously, Mark. I think it shows a real lack of governance policy. I mean, they don't really have a plan for governance, Mark, so they've got to throw gasoline on the cultural wars fire. But this particular attack, I want to get your interpretation, Mark. I know that you have a husband, and I know your husband. I know you guys, and I would just wonder, Mark, it's got to feel personally offensive on some level.
Well, you know, it's interesting that they're going back to this issue because, you know, if you look a little history of it, Wisconsin was the first state in the country back in 1982 and 1983 to pass civil rights bills for the gay and lesbian community. At the time, it didn't include the trans community. But in 1982, that bill was signed by a Republican governor, Lee Sherman Dreyfuss. Fast forward to the Republicans decide to weaponize this issue. It works well with, you know, an element of their base that likes to be afraid of people. And because of that, we fought through a lot of years of a lot of attacks. And then they always overplay their hand, got to the point that there's marriage equality. And then the majority of people in the country, a strong majority, support marriage equality. What's odd is they're going back to the issue by going after trans kids or others in Florida and Texas, simply again to appeal to the base. And I think that rose out of Donald Trump, you know, really playing so hard to the most extreme elements that everyone has to play hard to those elements. And Ron DeSantis, you know, wants to be president more than anything in life. And he got this bill passed. And unfortunately, you know, he's doing it at expense of a lot of kids who, you know, are going to wind up committing suicide and having a hard time in school and at home. Also, he can maybe someday be the Republican nominee for president. So, you know, it's done for all the wrong reasons. I think most people, again, see it at that. But it's awful that they've resurrected this level of hate. And I think it will ultimately backfire.
Mark, how do you think we as Democrats, and I think a lot about the messaging of the Democratic Party or the left, if you will, how do you think we should respond to these sort of cultural war attacks? I played some of the sound of that young lady, the young Democratic senator from Michigan, McMurrow. She was
captivating. I thought she did a great job by saying, look, a transgender kid doesn't make our roads in crappy shape, right? That's legislators who don't put money to things. So, you know, transgender kids don't make it that we have a teacher shortage problem. Transgender kids don't make it that you don't have health care, right? And I thought she did such an exceptional job by taking it head on. Don't let the Republicans take an inch on these issues. They're doing it for all the wrong reasons, and ultimately I really do believe people will do the right thing when given the right information, but that means Democrats have to have the spine and fortitude to stand up for what's right.
Mark, was that the problem after Obamacare passed and we saw the quote-unquote wave election of 2010? Do you think Democrats, and I know you were in the state assembly then, Mark, but do you think Democrats ran away from Obamacare, ran away from their policies, ran away from their own advocacy to a certain degree? And I feel like it's being replayed in slow motion, like Democrats running away from the policies of Joe Biden. Want to get your thoughts, Mark.
Yeah, I could give you a half hour on this, but let me say it this way. I think what ultimately happens is, you know, one, Republicans talk in headlines and Democrats talk in paragraphs. Republicans get their messaging across, I think, better than Democrats often do. But secondly, is we're afraid because some special interest that's funding campaigns, probably funding both sides, then doesn't like something, and then we're afraid to displease them because ultimately we also need that funding in campaigns. And it really goes back to some of the fundamentals. If we have a campaign finance system like we have, we're going to continue to often make weaselly decisions about good decisions we made legislatively. And I think that happens all too often. Fundamentally, we need to make some core changes around things like gerrymandering and campaign finance, because if we don't, there are some real big new threats that are coming that I think could derail our democracy. I mean, just one example is, you know, there's these outside, super PACs. There's a new one out there that a billionaire is putting at least $1 million into every race in the primary of where he endorses. $1 million is a lot of money when raising it for a campaign and in a primary. And, you know, once that starts, other billionaires see that, that's going to follow. And eventually it's going to be a race among who is favored by which billionaire. We've got some real threats out there. And I think sometimes, you know, when some of those threats don't like, you know, the issues we do, we don't stand with the very smart decisions that we made that actually benefit real people.
Mark, I heard a little promo. Doug LaFollette appeared on this show just a few short weeks ago. He is the long-term, and I mean really long-term, Secretary of State of the great state of Wisconsin. Sort of a dignitary role at this late hour, but Republicans would like to change all that. If they could win that office, they'd love to push through more electoral malfeasance. But here's my question, Mark. My understanding, the Associated Press is reporting that an Alexa Sabor is going to primary Doug LaFollette. And want to get your interpretation, Mark. This feels a little bit like blue-on-blue violence to me. What do you feel like, sir?
You know, I haven't seen that. So it's a little harder to comment on it. I don't know where they're running from or what the issues are. So I don't know if I'm the best place to say that. I always think anyone should be able to run for anything. And ultimately, you know, debate of ideas is a good thing. But I do think if you take resources away from some of these important fights, that also can be a problem. But I don't know enough, honestly, to give you a fair answer.
Okay, fair enough, Congressman. There's already, you know, talk afoot about perhaps primarying Joe Biden. Mark, is that ever appropriate to primary the incumbent president if he's on your team?
You know, I mean, we've seen that happen previously, right? People like Ted Kennedy and Jimmy Carter and others. If the person's not doing the job, again, I think people have a right to do that. I don't think that's true of Joe Biden. Everyone blames him for inflation on the Republican side. Well, there's inflation in France. There's inflation in Australia. There's inflation in South Africa. Are we going to say that somehow Joe Biden's responsible for all of that? Well, I guess they probably would. But, you know, it tells you how incredible that argument is. You know, I've been impressed. I mean, Joe Biden has done more than I expected as a strong Bernie Sanders supporter. He has done a lot of good things, and I would be surprised if there was a meaningful primary.
Well, Mark, I agree with you completely, sir, at least on this topic, politics mostly. Mark Polkan, my good friend and fine congressman. Mark, really appreciate you coming around today.
Hey, of course, anytime. Love to.
All right. Happy Happy 420 to you, Congressman. My best to your husband. More Devil's Advocates. I'm hitting the road. I'm going to Knuckleheads. You can join me there. 520 State Street, Madison, Wisconsin. Celebrating the 420 holiday with some great deals.